Mike has taken the thing
sure.
and eaten on the
pull through show.
And if we could also ask the immediate past chief of police in Arizona, or what was it?
Chief of the year.
Chief of the year, immediate past chief of the year to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Be my honor.
Please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Morning, Mr. Director.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, going to agenda item B, intros, presentations, and announcements. First, I'd like to say that Sheriff Daniels, who we just connected with, will be calling. Obviously, he's going to do the meeting telephonically. He was unable to make it into town today. We appreciate Sheriff Daniels doing that because we're right at a quorum right now with the eight members that are present. Also, you've met Ms. Jean Galvin before. Ms. Galvin is here to represent the board, provide you legal advice on the first final action case, 15170, involving Mr. Jazz Knighton. So she will be here for that portion of the meeting. Couple of updates in some areas. The Subcommittee on Basic Training Funding has had one previous meeting. We're meeting today at 1:30 p.m. Following lunch. And we should be able to finalize some recommendations for funding actions and so that those recommendations could be brought to the February board meeting for the full board to take action on. And as you know, the chief of the year past is the chairman of the of that particular, and you did an outstanding job on the Pledge of Allegiance. I really appreciate that, Chief. So,
thank you, Mr. Lane.
An update on the basic training curriculum update. Our consultant will be in town next week on the 24th. We'll be bringing in those 16 members that we brought in for the technical review committee. We put that out to all the chiefs and sheriffs, and it was like an overwhelming recommendations from the chiefs and sheriffs for that technical committee. So what we did is we certainly looked at regionally. We looked at different people who had backgrounds in both training but also as supervisory roles. So we're very excited to see that group get started. We've already put together the lists of people who will be sent the questionnaire. It's about a two-hour questionnaire that they'll have to get online and satisfy us. They're recruits, police officers who have graduated from academy in the last 5 years, as well as the people that directly supervise those people that graduated. It's a pretty complex project doing this job test analysis, but I'm very happy so far with our consultant, the work he's doing, and I believe when he goes live with that in March, then this consulting committee, the technical committee, will be looking at the results of that, and we will get to the point where the curriculum will be rewritten. We'll actually open the rules under a docket because it will require some rule change. That's also an opportunity for the board, if there's any other type of rule changes they might be interested in taking on, to take a look at those rule changes, and we'll go through that process. That's all I have under intros, presentation announcements, and I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chairman, for the consent agenda.
Thank you, sir. Has everyone had a chance to review the past consent agenda? So I'd ask for a motion to approve and all other actions related.
I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda and the appropriate actions.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Thank you very much. We'll be moving on, Mr. Lane, to the Executive Director's Report.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Under the budget, we're in good shape this fiscal year concerning our budget. Actually, for the first time since you appointed me as executive director 2 years ago, we actually are outside of a structural deficit. We're actually bringing in more revenue than we're spending. We've actually been able to trim down to the point where we're in a good balance there coming through this fiscal year. Obviously, I sent you the information last Friday. The governor released his budget. It includes an appropriation from the RFF Authority Fund of $837,000 for Arizona Post in support of basic training. It's the first step. Those of you that haven't been involved with the legislative process, we still have to get it through the legislature and in a finalized budget by the time they sign a die, which could be obviously several months down the road. I'm very hopeful that, it does well, because those monies will be basically just added right on top to the current funding that we're budgeting for next fiscal year for the basic training funding. So it will obviously boost that to a significant amount. So I really appreciate the support of the governor's office on this. I had a great conversation with Mr. Tim Romer, our policy advisor, on Friday involving this and a certain bill we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I wanted to make sure pass along my thanks to him personally, because we literally would not have our foot in the door if it weren't for Tim. And this would not even be in the budget if the governor wasn't very supportive of the basic training issue involving in the state. So that's really good news for all of us. Board communications with law enforcement association group. This Friday is the general annual membership meeting for the chiefs of police. I'll be in attendance at that, and I'll provide some information to the ACOP group as some of the items that I'm actually discussing today and follow up with the ACOP group. We did have the executive director of the Arizona Police Association, Mr. Joe Kluwer, came and met with Mark Perkovich this past week. APA has some concerns over our administrative code concerning Judge Mendel's shooting that they brought to Mr. Perkovich's attention. They had some concerns involving the issue of Judge Mendel's shoots being properly timed and the accuracy issue addressed. So we've had some discussions about that. We'll take a look at the issue, but just talking to different organizations and stuff, it doesn't seem to be the issue that's being raised. I think they had some concerns that some organizations weren't properly following the judgmental shoot guidelines that are in place, but it's looking like that may not be an issue at all. Personal staffing, as you recall, Mr. Donyeni will be retiring the end of March. We have identified a potential retirement for him, and we're beginning a background process to take a look at his background and see if he's certainly the right candidate from the meetings I've had with him and others have had with him. I think he'd be a great replacement, but once we get through the background process and we get to the hiring stage, then I'll go ahead and let you know who that individual is. He's got tremendous background. He's basically a ASPO certified instructor in every proficiency skill that we have. He's got tremendous background in basic in supervisory training as well as leadership training. So he would certainly be able to come in and really pick up that manager's position when Don leaves. So I'm very excited to see how that turns out, and the process just started on that. And that's all I have under executive director's report. If there's any questions in those areas? Right then, with the chairman's permission, I'll go into some legislative update. This last Friday, I sent you all a copy of House Bill 2239 that was introduced by Representative Barnesworth. That's the Arizona Post membership bill that had significant impact on the Post Board. Just for the record, I'll make sure I go over. It removes the following board positions: the college faculty member in public administration or a related field, the attorney general, the director of the State Department of Corrections, one member who is employed in administering county or municipal correctional facilities, two certified law enforcement officers with the rank of patrolman or sergeant from a county sheriff's office and the other from the city police department, and one public member. It then adds the following board positions: five retired law enforcement officers who retired with a rank of patrolman or sergeant from a police department in the state and who have extensive knowledge of and experience in representing officers and use of force incidents and discipline and major cases and laws that relate to law enforcement officer due process rights. One public member who is appointed by the President of the Senate who is not associated with law enforcement, who doesn't have a criminal record. And one public member who is appointed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives who is not associated with law enforcement. It also changes the population base for our large county sheriff and small county sheriff. It raises that limit up to 500,000, at least 500,000 population. That would limit the sheriffs. Only two of our 15 sheriffs would be eligible for the large county. And it also changed the population count for the large city chief, raising it to 500,000 or more. That would also limit it to only two chiefs of police in the state with over 140 of those in the state. I've had some conversations with some various groups, and I will bring this up with ACOP. I'm not sure what ACOP's position is going to be on this at this point. They haven't indicated, but certainly I got a call from the governor's office, Tim Romer, right away, within probably about 60 seconds of sending him the same email. He expressed some concerns over this, and so we'll be actively looking at how to best deal with this. Obviously, I heard from Director Ryan and some of the other members on this also on concerns about this and opposition to this. So right now, I think it's not scheduled for any hearings at this point, but I look for some guidance on the board. I would assume that the board would want us to start some conversations on why do we need this, and take it from there, because it's probably one of the best boards in the state, and there's no reason to be doing this type of, in my opinion, no reason to be doing this type of fiddling with the board composition, because this board has always been very solid and very equitable in your treatment on any of the disciplinary cases. So if the board has any other recommendations on that, I'll be more than willing to listen to those.
Just question, comment?
Yes, sir. So, the newer member, has the board typically provided direction to staff on legislative matters in the past?
Yes, they have, Mr. LaFever.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that the board propose this bill and direct staff to do so as necessary.
Second.
We have a motion and second. Is there any other discussion from the board on this? All or none. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
All right. Thank you very much.
Motion carried.
And we will carry that forward and open up some communications with the staff there, as well as Representative Farnsworth. Second bill I wanted to, just some minor bills that also have come out. There's one that actually Mr. LaFever brought to my attention. It's another Representative Farnsworth's bill involving sentencing. I think it may be the courts, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. LaFever, but the courts may have brought this bill to have Mr. Farnsworth run it. It actually makes a significant change to the CDF surcharge. There's a big bulk amount where the surcharge is dropped from 47% to 42% on each of those fines, so it's a 5% drop there. It then adds a $9 surcharge to be divided between Victim Rights Fund and the Victim Compensation and Assistance Fund. It then drops that from the formula of different types of where the CJF funds actually end up breaking down. It pulls those out of there, and then it raises the remaining members that are given distributions from the CJF fund a certain amount. That would raise our post amount from 16.64% to 18.97%. Right now, it's pretty hard to determine what kind of impact that would have with the significant drop in that one. It could actually end up harming us. Don't know. I haven't seen any figures on that. So hopefully we'll be able to sit down and look at some figures that the analysts may have put together or the courts may have put together on how the outcome will be on that, whether it will hold us harmless. But as we know, the money's already dropping in CJEP. If this then has that same type of effect, it could have a, you know, it could have a significant impact to us one way or the other. I'm not sure if it'll keep us flat where we are. Again, we'll have to look into that. So I'll be taking a look at that bill. House Bill 2207.
Representative, just a second, Mr. Director.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
As one of the agencies that does receive a small cut of that CJEP fund, we're going to be requesting a fiscal note from committee. I would recommend that those do the same reference, ask for a fiscal note so that we see whatever some analysis on this bill, so that we can do that, make better decide how it's going to
work. I think that's an excellent idea, and I don't think I need a vote by the board to do that. I think we'll just ask for the same fiscal note, because then they'll crunch those numbers for us, and we'll have a better feel of being able to tell the board how that would impact us. Thank you.
I don't know your feel on this, but very grateful to the governor moving forward on supplementing our dollars and our budget. My concern is the apparent look of tying citations written to anything that benefits law enforcement, training, whatever. And so my concern is that, I get where the benefiting victims programs doesn't have that same look. And so I'd like us to look at knowing whether, if in fact this impacts us, if there's a feeling in the governor's office and the Office of Budget that we need to move away from CJEP reliability and move towards being a budget item.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Chief Rodbell, in my conversation with Tim Romer, he clearly stated that if this appropriation goes through, it's a temporary fix. It just gives us another year to work on exactly what you're talking about. I think the governor's office, just the conversation I've had with Tim, they clearly have determined that feel the same way. I think they need the overall post-board budget. I think they would like to see move away from CJEP money and have a real solid type of appropriation that occurs, so it certainly would help with our budgeting. It's very difficult to budget when you don't know what you're going to be receiving for the year. So I got the impression from Mr. Romer that's clearly the direction we're headed with this. This is just a bridge to help us get past these leaner years, and so we can get to the point where obviously his statement would be we can't print money right now. So clearly we need to find that funding source that will give us a good solid budget every year.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
There's maybe one other, just minor bills. One would require all board meetings to be audio-visual, which is very, we already audio record all our board meetings. It's just a matter of adding a camera. I don't think we're going to put GoPros on everybody's forehead here so we can all get that type of conversation. But it had to do with also posting board actions within 5 days. We already do that. We're one of those boards that all these things are trying to fix with some of these other boards across the state we kind of get glopped into, but we already do almost everything you're talking about, so we're in good shape there. There's a bill 2062, had to do with licenses, permits, involving denials. There was some time issues associated with providing the applicant all the information about a denial within 30 days of application. I'm actually meeting with Representative Shope. He's also the Speaker Pro Tem. I got a hold of him right away, and he set me an appointment right away because I think our processes are very different than a lot of other boards. If you're going to become a nurse, you go get your education first, and then you show up at the licensing and get your license. We're very different, obviously. You have to go through your background. You have to go through all those checks. You're appointed by an agency after all those, and then you get your training, and then you become licensed. So we're a little bit different. But there's a lot of other boards out there that I think we're getting caught up in their realm, so to speak, and they probably don't follow a lot of the due process that we do follow. So I feel very comfortable talking to Mr. Shope, and I think we'll probably have a good chance of just getting exempted from a lot of these bills because we can show that we already follow these due processes, and so we should be in good shape there. I have nothing to report under the next item, summary of current events. And that brings us to agenda item G, Mr. Chairman, which was the review, discussion, and possible action on off-duty DUIs and the board's position and direction to staff regarding these. Both myself and Mike Saltz are available to discuss this. As you recall, we agendized this back in March of 2016. It was actually the same month that you appointed me as the executive director, where there was a lot of discussion about past practices, the direction the board had taken. Then in the July meeting that was held in Flagstaff that year, during public comment, we had also heard some additional public comments from then-Chief Joe Yonner from Phoenix Police Department, as well as former Sheriff Babu, that also brought up some issues they had concerns about. This was agendized at the request of the board for discussion. Quite frankly, staff is very open. We're really looking for direction from the board on this, on how you want us to handle the off-duty DUIs and such. So with that, sir, unless you have questions, I'll open
it up. Well, I think the discussion came up again because of the non-aggravating accident-related DUIs, where I thought we had all determined that these were going to be handled at agency discretion. The individual agencies were going to handle these, and yet the board continued to get these, and with new board members and maybe some time having gone by, they were again looking at bringing these into disciplinary action. So I think that's why it came up again. So definitely it's open for discussion. You know, I haven't talked to the staff in the past. I personally thought that if we do get these type of DUIs, non-aggravating DUIs, that and they are brought to the attention of ASPOS, that they go into the consent agenda or somewhere where we're not addressing it on an individual basis or whatever process may work. But I think we've heard plenty of times from chiefs and directors and sheriffs that that's how they felt these should be handled.
Chair and members of the board, currently a non-aggravating DUI is how we've been framing it, which is basically a lower BAC, no passengers in the car, relative cooperation with the police, no actions, things like that. That would be an aggravator in a criminal court. We've been under the presumption that the board would be taking no action, leaving it up to the agency. If post staff finds out some type of aggravator, perhaps previous action by their agency, you may still have a non-aggravating DUI, but perhaps post staff learns that this may not be their first DUI that the agency has dealt with, some type of intervening issues, then perhaps we will present those to the board. My only concern that I wanted to speak to you about before you move forward on your discussion is that this is a misconduct. There has been an arrest made, and I think it's important that that a no action is still considered a board action. So I think it's important that the board see these cases. I just think it's a matter of philosophy on how you want to take or not take action on those. I don't think it's proper for you not to be presented with these because there has been an allegation of misconduct. There has been a misdemeanor conviction. So if you decide that you want to leave it to agency discretion, I do think it would take a board action. Whether or not it goes into a consent agreement so that you have the opportunity to review the facts or leave it on the open agenda would be a matter of your decision. But I don't think it would be proper to let staff just administrative close these. That was the only thing I wanted to put out for you. I think it's important that the staff see these because there is an allegation with a conviction.
Do we hear of each and every DUI that occurs across the state? And also, I thought sometimes
if the person separates, Chairman, if the person separates from the agency and the agency informs post that there has been an issue, then yes, you would see them all. The issue that has been an item of discussion in the past has been the time that an officer receives a DUI and does not separate from the agency. The agency takes internal discipline of some sort, assuming they take some type of discipline, in which case it would be optional for the agency to inform post staff. And as far as we know, most of the time they do not. If they're handling it internal through some type of intervening type of discipline or counseling, then we would not know. So, if you ask the whole state, do we know about all DUI arrests or convictions? No. We only know of the ones that result in some type of separation from their agency.
Or we find out some other way. The case in point was, officer was still working for the agency, and we found out about it somehow. And we were taking action, and the officer had already been disciplined, and quite some time had passed. That's
correct.
Really what created this issue for us.
There are, per your rules, there are times that post staff would be informed of a violation in which a case may be opened. It could be through the press, through an employee association, or it could be other members of the public who may or may not have an agenda, to be frank with you. You know, they feel like maybe they were treated differently and are looking for some equity, or they just think police shouldn't have any DUIs without becoming for the post board. That is correct.
Yes, I have a question, Mr. Chairman. So if somebody has a DUI on their record before they would apply to an agency, would that be a disqualifier for someone wanting to become an officer for City of Buckeye or their sheriff's department?
I don't think it has.
Chairman, Mr. Reuter, no, it's not. It still would be within the minimum standards that they could. Generally, they're going to want some time to go by, and they'll take in other factors of their overall driving record. But just the mere fact of a DUI in their history is not an eliminator for the process.
comments, other discussion on the issue? I think we have to give some direction. Chief, I know you had a thought. Have you?
Well, and Sheriff Daniels was on the phone. I know that he and I were the two, I think, that voted last time in the minority. And so if we were to put the case on the consent agenda, if either one of the two of us felt it needed to be brought off the consent agenda, we'd bring off the consent agenda for discussion. That's how it would work, right? Any correct. One of us could bring off consent.
That's correct.
Okay. So I don't have a real problem with going that direction. What I really want is consistency from the board. And right now we've been consistently inconsistent. And so I don't know how the sheriff feels, and perhaps he wants to address this, but I certainly feel comfortable putting on a consent agenda.
Mr. Chair, if I can comment on that. My biggest concern after the last meeting was the standardization and consistency of this board, and make sure, I think that's what we all agree, and I agree with the chief's comment on that. We talked afterwards, and I talked to a few of the members, but again, I'm looking for consistency on this that takes away any challenges and gives us credibility for as a board.
And thank you, Sheriff. I also think that being we don't get them all and hear them all, how can we be consistent when we're not receiving many of the ones across the state? So on the legal part of it, the legalities of having the board, the ones we do get that are, we're not knowing the proper term, but non-aggravating, if we put them on the consent agenda and no one feels the need to. No, go ahead.
I'm going to interrupt you. So let me ask a quick question. Every case that comes to you all, we're going to see. That way, you don't do any screening whatsoever at your level to say this is not appropriate for the board.
Not with the DUI, sir.
But in any case.
If we receive a termination notice and they've marked the box that there's cause to believe there was violation of Badge of Pulse rules, you will see the case.
Okay. Yes, sir. And I think the other piece, too, that complicates the DUI part is if the leadership of the organization decides to do something outside the norm, they're not going to fire them, we still have the ability to drive and suspension of the license. And so there's organizations that want to work through those problems with their employee for whatever reason that is. And that makes this more protracted and more complicated, too, when it gets to the board. So I think if we as a board can agree that a non-aggravating DUI is left to the agency discretion, I think that's what we're looking for, right? Mm-hmm. And then if there's aggravating parts to it, then we address it as the board. But I will tell you that I'm probably one of the problems in this, because when I was the chief of Mesa, we tried not to terminate people. And we at DPS right now are actually going to come to a new change that we will terminate you on your first DUI. It's just a change of the agency. I think it's a change of what we're looking for. And I think as the agency head, as I'm consistently out trying to get people not to drive the wrong way on freeways and the impaired driver issue, that we're allowing that to occur within our ranks. So I think I am going to have a change in the philosophy of what we do at DPS. So.
Yes, sir. So as I read the summary, the current practice of the board is to impose a sanction of 6 months suspension of certification for non-aggravating DUI. And typically that is a suspension of certification that's already occurred, because we hear it some time. So we're basically imposing a sanction past time frame to basically say that we're providing an action as a board. Are we saying we want to get away from that and only do agency discretion? Because I'm just trying to understand what we're trying to be consistent in doing going forward, I guess, is my question.
Mr. Chairman, what we've seen, interestingly enough, we actually did some data research. 2015, this board took the six-month suspension for all DUIs, whether they're aggravated or not. Everyone who did, I think they were all actually done under consent agreement. And that's why we're looking for direction. A lot of these are consent agreement things that we can deal with on the aggravating also. But it's almost like since beginning 2016, since we actually agendized this, we've had cases where the board has taken no action agency discretion on misdemeanor DUIs with no aggravating, but we've also had cases where the board decided to take suspension action. So that's where we're getting a lot of the inconsistency right now.
Does that answer?
It does, but so again, I'm just trying to understand what we are trying to, what our consistent rule or policy is going to be going forward. Is it the same as what's outlined, or are we now saying we're not going to do 6 month pass rep suspension and just do only agency discretion?
I think that's discussion to the board and what the thoughts are on.
Mr. Chairman, members, in my agency, discipline that is administered internally for a non-aggravated DUI is an 80-hour suspension. In addition, we will send the employee for some type of assistance. If it's aggravated the first time, it's dismissal. If there is a second DUI, it's dismissal.
So I guess the question to the board is on, is there a 6 month suspension included in the agency discretion? Or is it just plain agency discretion? Is that what the...
Normally when the board takes no action, agency discretion, that means whatever the agency did is what the board's accepting.
Right.
And there's no suspension at all. A suspension would be a separate action.
Any other questions, discussion, or explanation on the agency discretion?
I just want to clarify that reality is the only ones that are, I want to say, of a concern that have come, and it's stated in this memo, that one of the groups that are concerned are smaller agencies that a six-month suspension could affect their ability to maintain that employee. But reality is that's going to be a very, 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 very small part, because if they're still with the agency, then most of the time we're not going to hear them, except for those rare ones we've talked about where the media or somebody notifies us. The overwhelming majority of these that we see are people who have been terminated already. And so the decision of the fear that they may not be able to maintain their employment is actually for a very small percentage of these people. The most of the ones that we actually see have already been terminated.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Sergeant Andricola, that's correct. And if you really look at the majority of cases the board does, there are going to be aggravating circumstances, and that's why they were terminated. But there are those agencies that you know, are working with their people. Obviously, if they have a misdemeanor DUI, they get them into impaired treatment training. They want to salvage that employee if all possible.
I'm somewhat biased because I've spent 20 years of my career in the traffic division and 18 of those supervising the impaired driving unit. So I frankly don't have any sympathy for an officer driving impaired off duty or on duty.
Any other comments or discussion on putting the non-aggravating on consent agenda for agency discretion and can be pulled by board members if need to be?
Mr. Chairman, do we need to identify or define non-aggravating at this point? 0.08, 0.15, no wreck, no lying to the police, that type of thing like we've seen in the past? Or
right. Mr. Chairman, Chief Hall, normally those aggravating, those are exactly the issues we bring to you. They've been involved in a crash. They've had children in the back seat. It's an extreme DUI. Those are the ones that obviously we consider aggravating in those cases and stuff. So, you know, so if it's a someone has a 0.10 and cooperates with the police, you know, does penance, whatever, and as there's no crash, there's none of that type of issue involved, is I think the ones we're talking about. And if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, Mr. Andrew Cole brought up your off-duty and on-duty. The board on-duty DUIs is quite consistent in revoking those individuals, so I don't want to mix those two up.
Thank you.
Mr.
So the only other concern I have is when you prepare the consent agenda, we'll get some of a detailed description of the case so we can make a decision whether we're going to pull it or not.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Chief Rodwell, that's correct. You'd have a brief overview that outlines the issues concerning the case. If you chose at that point you saw something in there that you thought was potentially aggravating, that we didn't catch a staff or we didn't feel it was a staff, then certainly you can go when we get to the consent agenda, just like on the voluntary relinquishments that we have in there now, you could ask that that one be pulled from there for discussion. Is that correct?
Thank you. Anything else?
I assume you'd need a motion for this.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. Yes, it puts it on the record.
And if there's no further discussion or questions, may I have a motion on this?
I have that, sir.
I'll take a stab at this. So, I make a motion the board direct staff to recommend no action, agency discretion, for cases involving a first-time conviction of off-duty DUI without aggravating circumstances, and include those cases on the consent agenda.
Well done.
You seconding
that? I second that. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion on the issue? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Two opposed?
Nay.
And the motion carries. Thank you. We'll be moving on to the next agenda item.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the next three agenda items are some petitions for experimentation by three different agencies, and I'll turn this over to Mr. Saltz.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch, Director Lynch. Mr. Saltz, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I'm first, okay. agenda item H is a petition to have abuse of a prescription medication to be considered experimentation. The facts of the matter are before you. The petitioner is from the Tohono O'odham Police Department. Him and his chief are here to address you if you'd like to discuss. Staff does not make a recommendation on these types of petitions. The applicant in this case had used prescription-only Viagra 15 to 20 times between the ages of 18 and 21. It has been a period of 12 years since that has occurred, and that is because he obtained a prescription. If you accept the petition, then that use would be considered experimentation, and you'd be allowed to proceed with the application process. Any questions for me?
Any questions for Mr. Saltz? If not, Mr. Jimenez, any comments or he here to discuss? Or?
Oh, Chief Begay's here.
I'm sorry. Whomever, please, sir.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board.
Good morning.
My name is Alton Begay. I'm the interim chief. Police for the Tohono O'odham Police Department. Mr. Jimenez is not in here with us right now, but I'm representing him. Mr. Jimenez, you know, he's as far as the backgrounds and what we've done in our part to get him where he's at for employment, you know, there was nothing really consistent negativity towards his any of his backgrounds regarding just this situation. He was honest, and he did disclose his usage. So, therefore, you know, I recommend that, you know, the board waive the indiscretion. And also to give a little bit of history, Mr. Martinez Jimenez was a natural-born citizen of Mexico until the age of 25. He became a U.S. naturalized citizen. So what the packet says, I don't live in Mexico, but from what I hear, through my research and through networks that I know of individuals that have gone to Mexico, you know, the kind of norm practice is that, you know, they don't particularly police their narcotic prescriptions, basically going to a pharmacist and paying a fee or getting an on-site doctor to sign off on the prescription. So I know that practice is kind of a norm in the country of Mexico, which I don't know, again, personally, but I just want to share that with you. And you guys, I mean, you guys probably know that, so I don't want to go into further in that. But Mr. Jimenez, he's done an outstanding job as far as improving himself, becoming a U.S. citizen by getting his education. He's got his bachelor's in criminal justice. He also has a certificate in basic corrections, which he did work corrections for approximately 7 years, five with the state of Arizona and two with the Federal Bureau of Prisons. At the same time, during those times, he also obtained his certificate of forensic and crime scene technology. And so, you know, he's definitely a good individual. He's, you know, being new to this country, you know, he made better of himself by obtaining his education. So other than that, I really don't have anything to say other than just a prescription. I mean, I understand that it's not a mind-altering or, again, through from my research that I researched that it's not a addictive narcotic. So, but if anybody knows any different, please, you know, share that with me. But I don't have anything further.
Thank you, sir. Any questions or comments for the chief? Having none, may I have a motion on the way?
I move the motion that we accept that experimental usage and grant the waiver.
A second.
Thank you, sir. I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on this issue? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Mr. Schultz, we'll move on to the next one.
Chairman, members of the board, the next petition is to have cocaine and methamphetamine use considered experimentation. Your rules state that the maximum lifetime use of these drugs is 5. The petitioner has used cocaine 5 times and methamphetamine once. It was during the ages of 18 and 19 and occurred over 23 years ago. So in summary, his use of narcotic dangerous drugs exceeds your limit by 1. So he's... What? I'm sorry, I can't read. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm speaking of item J. I guess I skipped one. I apologize. That's what he was whispering to me. So I was speaking of J. Ritchie. So I'm on the wrong agenda.
Well, we'll stay with J. If you want to keep going, then we'll go back.
That's fine. I just want to make sure the board can get the right facts. I apologize. If we're ready to proceed. So he exceeded the rule by 1 and has made a petition to have his use considered juvenile indiscretion. His chief is here to speak on his behalf. I believe he's here also, correct? Yes.
Morning, Chief.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Thank you for your time today. I'm here to respectfully request that the board approves the petition for Mr. J. Ritchie. He had some drug use that exceeds the limit of 5 during the age of 18 and 19 while he was in high school. Since then, he's served 3 years in the United States Air Force. He's served 20 years with the Department of Corrections, retired at the rank of captain, and has had no issues since that time, and we've done our background. We're hopeful that the board will approve this petition.
Thank you, sir. Questions, comments for the chief? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
I make a motion that we accept this as juvenile indiscretion and approve the chief's wishes to look for a waiver for Mr. J. Ritchie.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz will move back to I.
Yeah, I apologize for that, sir.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead, sir.
I'm trying to get my place again now. Okay, the next petition, Mr. Hogeen, exceeded your maximum amounts. He used cocaine twice, steroids three times, which is seven, and also a painkiller of unknown description twice for a total use of seven times, which exceeds your maximum by twice. Also, he had one marijuana sale, which violates your rules. It's important to know that this marijuana sale was a pass-through. He obtained the marijuana, accepted $20 for it, didn't make any profit, gave the $20 to the original seller and the marijuana to the other person, so he didn't receive any money from the sale. This is not given as an excuse. I'm just letting you know the type of sale that it was, and it is a violation of your rules. It occurred when at the ages of 16 through 19, which is over 11 years ago, and I think that's everything I have.
Thanks, sir. Any questions, comments?
And I think the chief is here for that too.
Thank you, Chief.
Hello again. Mr. Hogeen, he's been working with our corrections department, tribal corrections department, for approximately 7 years now. So, and this individual, you know, he showed himself through by graduating the corrections academy through Bureau of Indian Affairs in Artesia, New Mexico, and he has extensive additional training under his hat with corrections as far as being a part of their emergency response team. So going back on his history, and again, it was just something that, you know, again, 11 years ago, you know, that was something that we found on his background that he did disclose, and he did not hide or try to alter in any way. He was very honest, and that kind of goes on his character and his integrity, especially working with our corrections division. In our tribal police jail. So I do highly recommend Mr. Hogeen. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here in speaking on behalf of my other individuals. So I highly recommend to the board that, you know, we can waive this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? May I have a motion?
I can do this again.
Right ahead.
Make a motion that on behalf of the chief that we accept this as a experimental and juvenile indiscretion, and that we allow the waiver for Mr. Hogeen to work for the Tohono Tribal Police.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Chief.
Mr.
Chairman,
have one
more
comment.
Yep, please.
Chief, thank you for doing that. Those are difficult decisions. The guys are lucky to have your leadership, and for you to, you know, find people that you can have in your tribal community that grew up there and be part of your police department and provide your community that that service that you're looking for. So, good on you for being here, and thanks for making the trip up and representing your people.
Absolutely. As a member of this tribe and live on the nation, it means that much more special to me. So thank you, gentlemen, for coming out.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. All right. That is Mr. Salt. So we're moving on to item K now.
I think I'm done.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure before I walked away because I got mixed up. Yeah, I'm done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Moving on with the agenda. Arizona Department of Corrections report update, Director Ryan.
Mr. Chairman, members, since the December 20th meeting, following has occurred. Our Correctional Officer Training Academy, a total of 173 out of 181 cadets graduated, including the Safford Regional class, graduated on December 22nd. 8 cadets resigned, 8 recycled in, 8 cycled out, none were dismissed. Currently, we have 3 classes in session with 115 cadets attending. In terms of vacancies and attrition, of 6,655 officers that are authorized. We have a vacancy as of yesterday of 877, or 13.18%. Our current attrition rate thus far in the fiscal year is 11.13%. One cadet participated in the waiver program in FY18. In terms of county and tribal detention, IGAs, in FY18, there have been 10 graduates from Cochise and Santa Cruz counties. And at the CODA facility, the K-9 Academy graduated. We had a one-day statewide law enforcement interdiction training. It was held at CODA by HIA and Pima County Sheriffs. We are going to take 175 of the CO positions, and we are going to be pursuing the established 175 correctional officer trainee positions, and we will be pursuing people graduating from high school between the ages of 18 and 21, and they would be assigned to non-contact posts such as control rooms, mail and property rooms, and these positions have already been approved by the court board. We need to recruit and find solutions to this vacancy problem that is just continuing to grow.
Thank you, sir. Tough situation. I wish you luck in your re-entry. Your state of income you're working on as well.
Thank you. The prison system right now is not growing, and it hasn't for about 18 months. We've seen the greatest decline in the growth of our prison system since 1974. There are no prison beds on the horizon, and we are continuing to focus on reentry and recidivism reduction. We will be expanding the employment centers at the Lewis Prison from 100 beds to 275 by the end of February, and an additional 20 beds at the Women's Prison at Perryville. 63% of the people that are committed to the Department of Corrections come from Maricopa County. That's where they're likely to return to. And so we need to work harder at educating the community about reentry and accepting the fact these people are coming out of prison and are coming back here.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Any questions, comments for the director? All right, we're going to move on. Mr. Yenny. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Report on in-service training.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Since my last presentation, we have facilitated following trainings all here at Post. We did a background investigator school in December. We had 44 in attendance at that. We had an orientation for our AOP 23 class. There were 34 people in attendance for that. We did a basic equine class just a week or so ago. We had 27 participants there. We did, I think it was last week, we did our ALP 23 week one. We actually lost two people between the orientation and the first week. And next week, we have a full class of What You Do Matters that's going to be held right here at Arizona Post. The remainder of what I'm going to talk about all has to deal with our digital media unit. If you remember last session, I talked about the partnership we had with Dr. Neil Websdale in that appraised domestic violence training that appraises the Arizona Intimate Partner Risk Assessment Instrument System. Our first digital media training program, primarily targeting the initial responding patrol officers, is in current production. That training will provide an overview of the appraised tool and its proper use. There's a training session scheduled in Sierra Vista March 13th and 14th at their police department. And in addition to that, a series of video slash graphics promotional announcements is being produced for statewide distribution. Digital Media Unit is doing a promotional video for the Gila River Indian Community and Police Department. This coincides with a law enforcement and Indian Country production that's been previously distributed. The production of the ACJC, Arizona Youth Survey Marketing Program, is almost completed. We have begun, we, when I we were talking about digital media unit, has begun production of a behavioral health intervention and strategies for law enforcement digital media program. We hope to have that released in April. An update for law enforcement CPR was just released through our digital download system. That's going to give an hour and a half of continuing education training for all of our officers in the state. We're continuing to work with John Stevens on the production of a short training video for the administration of naloxone to canines should they experience an exposure to fentanyl. And we're in the initial stages of a new digital media training program that will be produced for the Department of Liquor License and Control entitled Covert Underage Buyer Program. And one last thing, we're holding a statewide training coordinators meeting next Tuesday at the Arizona Game and Fish headquarters on Carefree Highway beginning at 10 o'clock. We are hoping to get representation through every agency throughout the state just so that we have continuity of messaging the way that we are delivering training, what the training needs throughout the state so we can best address them and get those trainings out to where they're needed. And unless there's any questions, I have nothing further.
No, thank you very much. As always, very busy. You guys are doing a great job. I look forward to seeing the behavioral health video coming out. I know the first aid for mental health is going well, and much appreciated. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You bet. All right. Moving on into final action cases. Case number one, Mr. Hargrave. Case number 15-170.
Thank you, Chairman Masher, members of the board. Seth Hargraves, Assistant Attorney General, here to present the case regarding former Colorado River Indian Tribes Police Department Officer Jazz Knighton. This matter came to a hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings on November 1st, 2017. There were three allegations made at that time. First being that between June 6, 2014 and August 14, 2015, Officer Jazz Knighton failed to properly impound evidence and property. That on September 3, 2015, Officer Knighton was not truthful when he informed a polygraph examiner that after having a small amount of methamphetamine in his patrol vehicle for about a month, that he had submitted the methamphetamine into the department's property and evidence. And finally, allegation three, that on September 11, 2015, Officer Knighton was not truthful when he informed the investigator that, again, after having a small amount of methamphetamine in his vehicle for about a month, he submitted it into property and evidence. This whole matter initiated in August of 2015 when the town of Parker Police Department received an anonymous complaint that Officer Knighton was storing evidence and drugs within his house. Investigation commenced. It could not confirm or verify that any evidence was being stored at the house. However, Officer Knighton admitted that he had stored evidence in his vehicle and not properly turned it in. There were some items, including purse and IDs, that he had maintained in his vehicle for up to 3 months. And there was a methamphetamine that he kept in the visor inside his vehicle for about a month before he turned it in. At the hearing, evidence and testimony was submitted. Officer Knighton did not dispute the allegations regarding the mishandling of the evidence, and representatives from the department testifying that as a result of his mishandling, approximately 20 cases had to be dismissed due to his actions involving the evidence. There was further testimony that they could not corroborate that he had actually turned in the methamphetamine as he claimed. The administrative law judge issued a decision, and as well as the subsequent notice of corrigendum, finding that the board established by preponderance of the evidence the allegations that were set forth and that conduct constituted a violation of post rules. We would ask that you accept the administrative law judge's findings of fact and conclusions of law as set forth in the decision and the notice of corrigendum. And based upon the conduct, the fact that cases were negatively impacted and issues of dishonesty, recommend the board revoke certification. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know Mr. Knighton is here. Absent any questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Hargrave. Mr. Knighton, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Board.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I was raised in the values to always tell the truth and everything will be okay. I will elaborate on that more by the end of my speech. I would like to address a couple of matters that involves my post-forms. I did not ever set or expect to be in this type of predicament. I am young. I am learning every day. I do not know what to expect or how to defend myself in a case before post. This is all new to me. One does not go into profession and expect to endure this. After reading the amended correspondence letter dated May 22, 2017 from Post Section 3, Right to a Hearing Part B, I had a sense of hope that I would call Attorney General Michael Schultz due to Burbage State. If you wish to discuss the hearing process or settlement options, please contact Michael Schultz. I wanted a clear understanding of the allegations against me. Section 1 of the letter did state 3 allegations, all involving evidence. I did tell the truth about mishandling evidence, but truly did not know of any other underlying allegations due to this mishandling. I did contact Mr. Schultz about, but was graciously advised that he could not help me due to they are against me. I was lost, needing guidance. I did not have the financial means to hire an attorney to help me understand the allegations and to help me through the hearing process and settlement options as stated in the letter. Also, I would suggest that mail correspondence be sent certified due to I have a feeling that I was not sent all paperwork associated to this case. This throughout process is due to when I was physically submit my witness list in person to Mr. Schultz, I advised him that I did not have a trial time and that I was going to show up early. He advised me that his secretary sent out an email to me or mailed it out. I politely informed him that I never received this notification. He again graciously found out the time and informed me. My fellow police officers, knowing my general honest character and also for the first time finding out this allegation, took it upon themselves and found a case that would be linked to this allegation. This was after the fact that the one of the initial officers in the investigation had advised Post of no such case was founded. But this finding was found a couple days after the post proceedings. I contacted Mr. Schultz of the case that was founded and advised him of the new information, but he advised me that it should have been submitted at the hearing. Again, I did not know the total allegations against me besides of the handling of mishandling of evidence. I did turn in evidence, but if you were to ask of any other officers, including the chief of on down the ranks, about our evidence submitting procedures, if they are honest, they would advise you that anyone could enter into the evidence room due to the door did not lock. You just had to open it. I was advised that this lock was finally fixed a couple months ago. I did submit evidence, but once it leaves my hands, I have no control over how it is handled. We do not physically give evidence to an individual. Next, I would like to advise of an internal affairs investigations report against the Chief Ponce. At this time, this was not a...
Chairman, I'm going to object. This was a matter Mr. Knighton attempted to bring up at the hearing. It was not relevant. The judge did not allow it. He tried to do at the hearing, and what it appears he's trying to do now is to litigate his employment issue, which was moved because he resigned in lieu of termination. Any allegations he has against the chief are not relevant to the allegations of the locals. They're not allowed to hearings. They should not be allowed now. They're not part of the record. They're outside the scope of this matter.
Thank you. And you do only have a few more moments left, about 3 minutes or so.
Okay. Well, I was bullied into resigning, but I'm not going to lie to you now. Yeah, you know what? I said these things. I can't go back on them. I said it in front of camera, right in front of the lie detector. I told him straight up. But I do believe I turned in the evidence, straight to evidence. And, yes, I turned it in late. I'll admit to that. Once you only have a sergeant and two patrol officers on covering the whole Colorado River Indian Tribe, it gets busy when you have domestic violence. Like, call after call, but that is my mistake that I had to live with every day now because I did that mistake. And now, honestly, it's in your guys' hands. And I'm going to accept whatever your decision is.
Thank you, sir.
I can never go back on that.
Thank you very much for your comments. And is there any questions? Comments? Having none, may I have a motion on the matter? Thank you.
I do have a question.
Okay.
I had read through this before, but I'm trying to find it again now. Were there any results on that polygraph?
There was evidence of polygraph were inadmissible. We did not introduce them.
Okay.
What we introduced was the statements that were made in the pre-exam interview, which was inconsistent with the actual facts.
Make a motion that we accept the administrative law judge's decisions of facts and findings and impose a sanction of revocation.
Second.
If I may, does that motion include the supplemental findings in the notice of Corey agenda? She supplemented her findings. I just want to be sure that you've included that in your motion.
Hang on.
Yeah, the administrative law decision and then the notice of court agenda that was filed about a month later.
Yeah, so that would also include that notice.
Second. There's a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Having none, all those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Moving on to the next case, Mr. Saltz. 17-093.
Chairman, members of the board, this is the case. Just as a reminder, there are two Phoenix police officers that were involved in an arrest of a man who had thrown a rock through a window. There was video of it. Which resulted in allegations of excessive force involving a knee drop onto the suspect. Just I wanted you to be able to frame the issue. He has entered into a consent agreement with Arizona Post. The little factual background of how this got to Arizona Post is there was a internal investigation through Phoenix Police Department. It was reviewed, and at the time, Chief Yonner on Mr. Conaway imposed a suspension of 120 hours of suspension. Now, the actual incident occurred back in September of 2015, and because of extensive media coverage, I didn't get notified to Arizona Post until 2017. So there's a little bit of a delay. Because of that, he has entered into a consent agreement which matches the suspension issued by the chief at the time. What the allegations that Mr. Conaway did was he followed his partner up to make the arrest. So he was the second officer to go hands-on with the suspect. The suspect was originally compliant, as you can see in the agreement. However, he did not surrender his wrists to be handcuffed. So Mr. Conaway did deliver some strikes in order to get him compliant. The issue then became Mr. Conaway failed to report accurately on an internal form. He reported to his chain of command that he had used soft techniques, blocks and pain compliance, when in fact he did use a closed fist strike. He admitted that he reported it inaccurately, but stated that this inaccuracy was an error due to a drop-down menu in the form on the computer that he just picked the wrong one, that it wasn't his intent to report inaccurately, but he did admit that it was inaccurate, that he did use closed strikes. So in conclusion of this, if you look at page 3 of the agreement, the dates of the suspension that he settled in matched the dates that he was not acting as a peace officer due to his hard suspension with the Phoenix Police Department.
So I ask you to accept this police department, match this agreement, which matches the suspension. Mr. Conaway's attorney is here to address you if you'd like to have any questions from him.
Yes, sir. Michael, this is the video we saw?
It is.
Okay. I just want to make sure I had it right.
Yes.
Any other questions, comments on the matter? Or ask for a motion? Having none, may I have a motion?
Since we're Mr. Chairman, Mr. Saltz, the consent agreement is that he is suspended for that 120 hours that he was off on suspension from Phoenix PD, but nothing further past that.
Correct.
Correct.
That is correct. And he is currently employed with Phoenix PD.
That video was quite telling, and I think not only was it telling, but it was the subject in the video complied. Laid on the ground, as I recall, crossed his feet and laid down, and the officer, for lack of a better word, assaulted him. And I have no problem with what Chief Yonner decided to do with the suspension. However, I think as a board member, I'm still relatively outraged by the officer's performance and then what appears to be a lack of candor. I don't know that a 120-hour suspension of his peace officer certification matches what we saw in that video. I think that's my issue.
Chairman, Director, just as clarification, Mr. Conaway is the second officer on scene. I just want to make sure that we're clear that there's two officers. We'll be dealing with the first officer who did the knee drop next. This is the second officer on scene who assisted with the arrest. I just want to make sure that was clear. That, you know.
And I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you for the clarification.
I think his attorney would like to speak a little bit. Okay.
Mr. Sure. Chairman, members of the board, I just wanted to clarify two quick things with you. The first was what my colleague here just clarified, which was the officer that we're talking about right now, Eddie Conaway, was the second officer. The first was the knee drop officer. Eddie Conaway is the was the one who came in after. He was in the driver's seat, so his partner was the one who ran up and did the knee drop. Officer Conaway did admit to administering two strict close fist strikes to the upper solar plexus back area to gain compliance after his partner made two comments. One, he's got my hands, let go of my hands. So he makes judges is about a 50% closed fist strike to gain control of the hands. And the second was he's got the cuffs. And at that point, his partner, Officer Padilla, had already put one cuff on, and the fear was that he would now be using that cuff as a weapon. So he did another closed fist strike. Those are the two strikes. But Post isn't alleging that Officer Conaway did any excessive force here. The allegation is only that he failed to make the proper report. You should know that Officer Conaway is widely regarded as an officer who rarely ever has to go hands-on. He's fairly seasoned and a leader on his squad. But he did so by pressing a drop-down arrow, notifying that he utilized level 30 force. That's an automatically populated field in the PACE report. Phoenix PD doesn't use PACE anymore. But you should know that that does say restraints, locks, and cuffs. It's partially accurate because cuffs were utilized, but there was an escalated level of force that he could have put. You should also know, finally, that Officer Conaway was the one and only officer on scene who, after the dust settled in this individual who was perceived to be intoxicated on methamphetamine, making fairly outlandish comments to other police saying, shoot me. You should know that Officer Conaway looked around and noted that all of this was on camera, and he is the one who requested to the mall to provide them and PD with the camera footage, knowing all of this would be on tape. So that goes to his intent, as far as you should know that he wasn't trying to hide anything. He knew it was on tape. He recorded it, or he requested the footage, and that is exactly what kind of initiated the investigation here. Are there any other questions that I can answer on behalf of Officer Conaway?
Yes, sir.
So, and I appreciate Counselor the commentary. So when he initiated the request from the mall of that video of this incident, did he also report to superiors that what he saw in the initial contact with the subject was inappropriate, inappropriate use of force by his partner?
Yeah, so that's important. It was actually in his PSB recordings, or his statements to PSB. He didn't realize he didn't have a full appreciation for the force that was used by his partner. In fact, you know, he was essentially just getting out of the vehicle by the time, and just, you know, footsteps behind by the time his partner had done this. He, as for a supervisor on scene, Sergeant Rother did appear there. I think that's in your case overview. It says he was there about 15 to 20 minutes. You should know that Officer Conaway did not have a discussion with Sergeant Rother about what he witnessed at that time. He later admitted to PSB that, he didn't think that that was right for his partner. But Sergeant Rother, as Officer Conaway and his partner were riding away, Officer Conaway and his partner had a conversation. He asked his partner, did you have a conversation with Sergeant Rother? To which Officer Padilla replied that he notified the sergeant that he had tuned him up, and that the sergeant replied, well, clean him up and bring him back to DOC, because that's where he wanted to go. He kept saying, take me to jail, making these outlandish comments. So that's in essence the notification on scene. If I did answer your question, Director Mills said, I think that's what you were asking about, the notification on scene.
Yes, thank you, Councilman.
I'm kind of on the outside looking in on this one because I don't know all of the circumstances. I didn't see the video. I wasn't aware of the case. But the one question I do have on the drop-down for the PACE report, that was for restraints and wrist locks and handcuffs. In the actual report, was the use of the stripes mentioned in that report?
No, it wasn't, Member Boozen. No, it was not. In fact, I think in your case overview it says something to the effect of that the suspect was merely taken into custody, I believe, is the verbiage that was used. Does that answer your question,
yes,
sir?
Yes.
I thought there was another question.
I had a quick question. So my understanding is reading the documents that the only thing that this officer was held accountable for and the reason for the 120-hour suspension was his report writing and the lack of reporting.
That's
accurate.
Board Member Chief Rodbell, that is not entirely accurate. In the PSB, the Phoenix investigation, they did find that those two strikes were out of their policy, although I argued that was erroneous. Nonetheless, the 120 hours stuck, and the suspension was upheld.
Anything else?
So to clarify, it was excessive force. As to Conaway, it was excessive force and failure to report.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So just from my part, the two strikes were to the upper back.
Yes, sir. The solar plexus region is where my understanding was, and he testified to, or at least he told PSB that that's where he struck him. You can see it in the video, and he quantifies that as about 50%, and he said he did that to distract and to gain compliance in response to his partner making those two statements. He's got my hands. He's got the cuffs.
Anything else for I ask for a motion? Again?
Sure, we can show the video if it will help the board make a decision. I kind of forgot that you were out of render that call.
Well, that might be worthy. We haven't seen it.
Generally speaking, we don't show it again at the time of the consent agreement, but I think these circumstances are a little bit different with him not being seen, so we're glad to show
it. How does the board feel? Would you like to see it? Or
I just want to make sure that we understand that we're only dealing with one. There's two officers on the video. We're going
to... Yeah, on this one, I want to remind the board, we're only dealing with the failure to make the report. That you can't see on a video.
Sorry. Yeah.
And I'm afraid that would prejudice your opinion as to the
conflict issue. Okay. Comments from the board? Motion?
I'd like to make a motion.
Yes.
I move to reject the consent agreement for 120-hour suspension of peace officer certification for the date listed on the consent agreement.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to reject the consent agreement. Is there any further discussion or question?
Yes, Chairman, members of the board, Sergeant, just so you know, another option that you have is to modify it, in which case if it is modified, meaning if you have a recommendation for a settlement, his attorney will bring it back to his client. He can then accept or reject it and give him the same opportunity for a hearing or other type of settlement later. I just want to remind you that that is an option, that it doesn't have to be just a rejection. I'm just throwing it out as an option.
Is there any further discussion to modify the rejection of this consent agreement?
What happens if we reject it without a modification?
Then I'll speak to his attorney. We'll see if there's another settlement that we come to. Otherwise, it would go to hearing, and it would be before you in the final action. He still has his due process rights.
Any other discussion of the modification? We have a motion with a first and a second.
For rejection, to me.
For rejection. Having no more discussion, all those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
And the motion carries. Thank you. We'll be moving on to the next case. Mr. Salt, 17-092.
Chairman, members of the board, this is the other officer that was involved in this one. The facts of the call for service are the same, of course. Mr. Padilla, in this case, had received a 240-hour suspension. You can see the date of his hard suspension on page 3, which Chief Yonner had imposed on him. The difference in action on this one is this is the officer who was first out of the car. The suspect was laying on the ground with his ankles crossed and hands out, and he provided a knee drop to the officer. There was no injury reported by the suspect, and when interviewed, he wasn't really clear on the reason for it. He didn't recall it accurately. Is that fair? The suspect. Yes, he didn't recall it accurately. Again, the reasons why that this matches the times that he was not working as a peace officer is because of the delay from the incident until it came to post and it was notified by the media is how it came. It had a quite extensive media coverage. The other issue with Mr. Padilla is that he advised his partner that he had disclosed the use of force to his supervisor. When we talked about the previous case, it was kind of an ambiguous type of conversation. When the sergeant was interviewed, he said he was asked if force was used, and the respondent replied that there was no force abuse, which was clearly not an accurate report. I think that's all I have on this.
Question, comments from Mr. Saltz? Who do you want to comment?
Yes, I'd like to comment on that latter half, the Padilla's, the second allegation, failure to report. The conversation that was had allegedly on scene was Padilla telling the sergeant, "Sarge, we tuned him up." The sergeant replying, "Clean him up, take him to DOC, that's what he wanted." Now, when the sergeant was asked, and by the way, both Padilla and Conaway testified consistently that Padilla had made that notification and that Padilla later told Conaway that he made that notification that night. Later on, the Sergeant Rother, the supervisor who arrived on the scene, was asked. And Sergeant Rother's his recollection of the event is less than solid. In fact, he couldn't remember which officer he talked to that night, even though he had worked alongside Officer Conaway for quite a long time. And I think his statement was, I'm not 100% sure, and I couldn't swear on a stack of Bibles. And so when you're talking about this notification issue, I think there's a strong factual discrepancy there that needs to be weighed if you're not comfortable with the consent agreement as it has been agreed to with me and counsel here today. The 240 hours would be consistent and commensurate with a past practice in a discipline that was imposed not long ago with, you'll recall, the Phoenix police officer that stomped the individual's face down to the concrete. That had resulted in injury, obviously the lawsuit and everything else, whereas this one did not result in an injury with the knee drop and the remaining strikes. I believe you imposed a 240-hour suspension to that officer, and we're asking for one consistent with that.
Thank you.
Any questions at all?
Having none, may I have a motion in this case?
I make a motion to reject the consent agreement.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to reject. And is there any other discussion on this? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you. And why don't we take 5 minutes, take a restroom break, and this seems to be going a little long today. We'll take a few minutes, be back in five.
Thank you, sir.
Back into final action cases, Mr. Saltz, 16-058.
Chairman, members of the board, Officer Hernandez is formerly with the Gila River Police Department. Back in August of 2015, he was at the Wild Horse Casino. A member of his group of friends that were there was his wife or girlfriend's purse disappeared, and that person then got into a confrontation with security, made a confrontation with somebody he thought had stole the purse. They were ejected from the casino. Mr. Hernandez, in this case, became a little bit unruly himself, and told me, if you look at bullet number four, if I find you on the res, I'll F you up to security. The respondent in this case admitted that he should have acted himself more professionally, that he was out of line, but denies ever making a threat such as that. He was criminally charged with disorderly conduct, but the case was all dismissed, and he was terminated from his agency on April 7th of 2016. He's entered into consent agreement for, give me one second here. Yes, he's entered into an agreement for a 15-month suspension of his peace officer certification for his unprofessional conduct, off-duty unprofessional conduct, which would be from the date of termination for 15 months. So the dates would have been from, I apologize, April 8th, 2016 through July 8th, 2017, so completely retroactive. He has currently been appointed by another agency and this time of suspension is during his time that he was not acting as a peace officer. Sorry if I got a little rambly on there of his misconduct. So let me summarize this, because I think I confused myself a little bit. He was at the casino with a group of friends. One of his friends is another case that we're going to have in a moment, and he tried to intervene. During this intervention, they all got ejected from the casino, and this is when he made the alleged threat that if you come on the res, I'll F you up. And he then admitted that he shouldn't have said any. He was unprofessional, but denied making the actual threat. That's the summary of this person. He has agreed to a 15-month suspension of his peace officer certification.
Comments, questions? May I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the consent agreement decision order for the 15-month suspension running from April 8, 2016, ending July 8, 2017.
I have a motion. May I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Mr. Stultz will be moving on to the next 16-059.
Chairman, members of the board, Mrs. Salinas is the other part of this group. He was also formerly an officer of the Gila River Police Department. On the same occasion, it was his wife or girlfriend who had her purse disappear. Mr. Salinas confronted somebody that he suspected had taken the purse. It was not the correct person. This led into a physical confrontation, the one that the other person intervened to try to settle things down. During this, the Officer Salinas displayed his peace officer credentials in an attempt to threaten or influence the security staff of the casino. He then tried to get the call for service that was made by security staff canceled by contacting the on-duty supervisor, who was a subordinate supervisor, so he had some influence of him. He also failed to notify his supervisor of this whole indication after everything was said and done. I should note that the call for service was canceled because of his intervention. He was also charged with obstructing criminal investigation, but was found not guilty by a jury on January 12, 2017. He was terminated on April 17th of 2016 by his agency. He has agreed to a 2-year suspension of his peace officer certification. After the incident, he was truthful in internal investigations regarding the incident, although he made no comments of how he should have conducted himself that I'm aware of. Any questions?
Mike, you said he was truthful. I thought I saw this case when it initially came before. So was at one point he not being truthful about something? Or is that, might get us confused with another case. Okay, he was good to go. All right. Perfect, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? If none, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion. We accept the consent order, agreement, decision, order, impose a 2-year suspension of peace officer certification from April 8th, 2016 to April 8th, 2018.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Moving on to the...
Just may I make a comment?
Yes, please.
So I think, Mr. Schultz, this is a good time to contrast that a little bit. I mean, both of these gentlemen, I don't think did anything to the degree that the last two guys from Phoenix PD did. And we give them an 18-month and a 2-year suspension, and we give the Phoenix PD guys 120 and 240 hours. I think that's the issue that we're seeing in the board. I mean, that. So I just bring that to your attention when those agreements are made. When we see this, so we have a guy that makes a threat, and he loses it for 18 months, and a guy does an e-drop on a guy who's complying and he gets 240 hours. I think that was the problem with the previous agenda item.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you giving that.
Thanks for the comment. And I think we were moving on to case number 15-083. Mr. Perkovich.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Mark Perkovich, our compliance manager here at AZ Post. This first case, on October 18th, 2017, the board voted to initiate proceedings against Mr. Pedro Ortiz, who was formerly with the Mesa Police Department. On October 21st, a notice of complaint was mailed to Officer Ortiz's last known address using both regular and certified mail. Records indicate that Ms. Mercedes Ortiz signed for the registered mailing on October 21st, and to date, Officer Ortiz has not made contact with AZ Post to request hearing. In summary, regarding this case, an investigation by the Mesa Police Department revealed a pattern of unsatisfactory performance on behalf of Officer Pedro Ortiz. The agency determined that Officer Ortiz failed to thoroughly investigate and document multiple cases, failed to collect and store property and evidence, failed to follow departmental procedures in the service of orders of protection, and also failed to submit charging paperwork in a criminal case. In addition, Officer Ortiz improperly sent photographs of himself to a person with an active felony warrant and violated a notice of investigation he had been given by Mesa Police Department investigators. This was when he discussed an internal investigation with that same outside party. Further, the investigators with Mesa Police Department determined that Officer Ortiz provided misleading or dishonest information on the police report regarding the service of another order of protection. This is regarding how the order was actually served. Officer Ortiz was noted to have resigned his employment from Mesa PD on May 8, 2015, and research by AZ Post staff has determined in other facts, past similar fact-based circumstances, the board action has resulted in revocation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Having no questions, may I have a motion, please?
We'll make a motion that we accept the findings of fact and conclusion of law and impose a sanction of revocation.
Second. A motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Mr. Perkovich, moving on to the next case, 16-129.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, it was also on October the 18th, 2017, that the board voted to initiate proceedings against Mr. Victor Perea. He was formerly with the Casa Grande Police Department. The complaint issued by the board was sent to Mr. Perea by regular and certified mail on October 20th, 2017. U.S. Postal Service returned both mailings to AZ Post marked as unable to forward. This resulted in a database search being conducted by compliance specialist Billy Caldwell. This revealed an alternative address for both Mr. Perea and his mother, who later confirmed in person that he received mail at the location. As such, the notice of complaint was sent to the location by both regular and certified mail. The United States Postal Service tracking information showed this notice of complaint being delivered on December 2nd of 2017, and to date, Mr. Perea has not requested a hearing. In summary, it was back on July 16, 2016, between the hours of 2 and 7 a.m. in the morning, that Victor Perea and his wife engaged in a verbal and a physical altercation at their home located in the city of Coolidge, Arizona. Investigating officers with Coolidge PD noted that Mrs. Perea had physical injuries she claimed were caused when Officer Perea had pushed her, kicked her, and slammed her head against the wall. Officer Perea had also displayed physical injuries and admitted that he had pushed his wife during the argument. Assault and disorderly conduct charges against Officer Perea were initially deferred. This was so he could attend alcohol and anger management counseling. However, on December the 1st, 2016, the charges were refiled in the city of Coolidge Municipal Court. Records indicate that the charges were then later dismissed on April the 5th, 2017, when the victim failed to appear for that trial. Casa Grande investigators conducted an internal investigation and learned of other domestic violence incidents between Officer Perea and his wife that took place in 2006 and 2008, but which he did not reveal while in their hiring process with the agency. They believe that Officer Perea had intentionally misled them during the hiring process. Later then, on September 11, 2016, Officer Perea was involved in yet another verbal physical confrontation. This time it was with a female guest at a house party located also in the city of Coolidge. The investigating Coolidge officers submitted this case to the town prosecutor for criminal charges. The submitted charges were for assault and disorderly conduct. They were originally filed and then noted to be later dismissed. On August the 19th, 2016, Officer Perea was terminated from the agency. Research by AZ Post staff has determined in other past similar fact-based circumstances, board action has resulted in revocation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
May I have a motion, please?
Make a motion to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and post-sanction revocation.
Second. A motion and a second. Further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Mr. Perkovich, moving on to 17-101.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Again, on October the 18th, the board voted to initiate proceedings. This was actually for denial against a recruit, Cody Huggins, who was formerly with the Phoenix Police Department. On October 24th, 2017, Mr. Huggins signed for the notice of denial, which was sent to his address of record by certified mail. And to date, Mr. Huggins has not requested a hearing regarding this matter. In summary, it was noted that recruit Huggins had submitted a writing assignment on behalf of his police recruit training on April the 19th, 2017. This was while he was attending the Phoenix Police Academy located, or excuse me, the Elite Academy, which was located in Phoenix. Academy staff had noted that the syntax of his written document had differed from prior written assignments. Staff's further investigation found sufficient evidence to believe that recruit Huggins had actually plagiarized portions of the assignment using information commonly found on the internet. When questioned by Academy staff, recruit Huggins repeatedly denied outside usage of material or resources to complete it. After being required to compare his writing report or his written report to the information discovered on the internet, recruit Huggins admitted to the policy violation. On April the 26th, 2017, recruit Huggins' employment was terminated by Phoenix PD. Research by AZ Post staff has determined that in past similar fact-based circumstances, the board action has resulted in denial. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Having none, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion. We accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and impose a sanction denial. Please.
Second.
Or status.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll be moving on to the next case. Mr. Perkovich, 17-018.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, again on October the 18th, 2017. The board voted to initiate proceedings this time against Jared Standage, who was formerly with the Chandler Police Department. On October 23rd, 2017, Officer Standage signed the receipt for the certified mailing of the formal notice of complaint, and to date, he has not requested a hearing. In summary, it was back on April the 30th, 2017, about 3 a.m., that Officer Standage responded to a call for service involving an intoxicated 16-year-old female. She was reporting herself as being lost. Officer Standage responded to the call and later allowed the female to leave in an Uber vehicle. Following the call, he authored a departmental report where he identified the female under a different name of Cindy instead of her actual name of Sydney, and also reported her age as being 20 instead of the 16. During the internal investigation, Officer Standage explained making the false statements in his police report because he realized that he had made a mistake by allowing the intoxicated juvenile to leave the scene. On July 12, 2017, Officer Standage resigned from the Chandler Police Department. And research by AZ Post staff has determined other similar fact-based circumstances has resulted in revocation by the board. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have a motion?
Chair, I'll make the motion to accept the findings and fact and conclusions of the law and place a sanction of revocation.
Second. Motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Perkovich, moving on to 17-012.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, on October 18, 2017, the board voted to initiate proceedings against a Mr. Joseph Grant. He was formerly an appointment with the Arizona Department of Agriculture. On October 25th, 2017, Mr. Grant signed for the certified mailing of his notice of denial, and to date, Mr. Grant has not requested a hearing. In summary, it was on January 19th, 2017, that AZ Post Compliance Specialist Lori Waite had conducted a new hire audit on this particular applicant. Specialist Waite discovered that information in his background, wherein Grant had disclosed he had sold small amounts of marijuana between the years of 1981 and 1985. This behavior would actually constitute a failure to satisfy a minimum qualification for appointment under your rule 13.4.105A9. Research by the post staff has determined in other similar fact-based circumstances that the board action has resulted in denial of peace officer certification in these circumstances. Are there any questions?
Just a question on jurisdiction. So he never even shows up to an academy, and we've got the jurisdiction open.
We do. The moment that the agency appoints and attests to the fact that they meet minimum qualifications, we occasionally will find something where their attestation may be in conflict with post rules. And so if we can't address that through petition, typically we bring the case for denial.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
Yeah, just one thing, Mr. Chairman. And so this is 30-something years ago this guy does this. And, you know, I just see his running up against this a couple times with the Tohono O'odham and with Bisbee. And I think we're going to keep seeing these types of things come before us. And I just think, again, we need to look at our overall rules. But I don't know what small amounts means. It's pretty ambiguous. But, I mean, if you did something when you were a kid 30 years ago, and you, I would just hope that we would look for ways to let people who apparently made mistakes 30 years ago or 15 years ago still have an opportunity to participate in this occupation. But it just worries me that this goes too far. That's all.
If I may just speak to that comment, sir. In this particular situation, he was not a juvenile. He wasn't noticed to be an adult during that behavioral period of 81 to 85. What's your point as well, sir?
But let me ask this then, so in terms of procedure. So he doesn't show up, they dismiss him, we deny. Is that forever? Or is that in this case?
No, in this particular case, it would be permanent. All cases for denial are treated almost like a voluntary relinquishment or a revocation.
Okay. Anything else? May I have a motion?
I'll make a motion. I accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law. And oppose sanction or revocation.
Second.
I'm sorry, denial. Denial. There we go. I got you.
Second.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Nay.
Motion carries. And we will move on to the next case, Mr. Perkovich, 17-086.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is your last final action case for the day. It was on August 16, 2017, that the board voted to initiate proceedings against Mr. David Velarde. He was formerly with the City of Maricopa Police Department. On August 24, 2017, the U.S. Postal Service noted the certified mailing of the formal notice of denial was, in fact, delivered to his address of record. And to date, Mr. Velarde has not requested a hearing. In summary, it was on May 19, 2015, when recruit officer David Velarde was a recruit in the Mesa Police Academy for Maricopa Police Department. The recruits were participating in a required field problem scenario as part of that academy training. The clipboard, which the grade sheets for the individual scenarios had been left unattended on the dashboard of the patrol vehicle that was in use. These grade sheets contained both the solutions to the field problem as well as a coloration code. The assigned evaluator noticed that recruit Velarde had written the color of the scenario down on a field identification card. This was prior to him being told which scenario was at play. The evaluator deduced there was no way that recruit Velarde had known the color of the scenario unless he had actually looked at the grade sheet while he was away from the vehicle. When the evaluating officer questioned recruit Velarde about how he knew the color of the scenario prior to being advised, Velarde originally stated the officer had told him. This was a fact that the evaluating officer knew to be false. Upon further questioning from academy staff, recruit Velarde admitted to looking at the grade sheet to determine the color of the scenario and thus the solution. Recruit Velarde was dismissed from the academy for untruthfulness and an integrity violation. Research by AD Post has determined in past similar fact-based circumstances the board action in these type of cases has also resulted in denial of peace officer certification.
Questions? May I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion. We accept finding the fact and conclusions of law in terms of sanction denial of police officer status.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for the discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We'll be moving into the new cases. Thank you, Mr. Perkovich. So Caldwell, case number 17-172.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Billy Caldwell, your compliance specialist. This case involves former Mesa PD Officer Sessions. A female recruit who attended the Mesa Police Department Academy filed a complaint alleging that training officer Sessions came to her house on the evening of April 9, 2017, excuse me, while intoxicated and had unwanted physical contact with her. She claimed that Officer Sessions arrived at her home, carried her to the bedroom, kissed her, and attempted to take her pants off, apparently in an effort to have sex with her. Officer Sessions left the house when the female recruit asked him to go. Officer Sessions claimed that he and the female had a flirtatious relationship that began prior to her attending the police academy. Investigators discovered a series of text messages between Officer Sessions and the female recruit. These messages were sometimes explicit and could be characterized as flirtatious in nature. Officer Sessions' version of events was that he consumed 5 or 6 beers over the course of the evening and then went to the female's house while off duty. He tried to kiss her twice. Each time she told him no and pushed him away. Officer Sessions denied trying to pull the female's pants down and left the house without any sexual acts taking place. Officer Sessions admitted that his conduct violated the Mason Police Department's code of ethics, and he retired from the agency. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have.
Chairman, I would recuse myself from this. Yes, sir. Any comments, questions? None. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move to initiate proceedings.
Second.
A motion and a second to initiate proceedings. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Caldwell, moving on to 17176.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board,
Before you go on, I'm not asking to be initiated since the recommendation that comes not for that. You could identify potential board rule violations.
Okay, we're back on 17172, and what would that statute number be to incorporate in the motion, Mr. Hargis?
Violation of law. What is that?
13-4-109-8-12.
Thank you. That's incorporated within the amended motion. And all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. And we'll move back to 17176. Mr. Coleman?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board. At the time of this incident, Officer Summers, who's the subject of this case, was in the field training program at the Casa Grande Police Department. Officers there are required to regularly check their departmental voicemail messaging system, and Officer Summers received training on how and when to access this system. On November 10, 2017, Officer Summers told his FTO that he had last checked the voicemail system during the previous week, and he did not have any new messages. His FTO told him to check his messages prior to the beginning of their patrol shift on that date. Short time later, Officer Summers met his FTO at their vehicle and said he checked his messages but did not have any new ones. The two began their shift. Later, the FTO instructed Officer Summers to access the system on speakerphone so he could listen. After numerous attempts, Officer Summers accessed the system, and the FTO discovered new messages, the first one from October 17, 2017. Officer Summers admitted that he had lied to his FTO because he had forgotten the procedures for accessing the voicemail system and did not want to appear stupid in front of the FTO and his peers. He was terminated from the Casa Grande Police Department on November 16, 2017, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have.
Having none, may I have a motion?
We have a motion for agency discretion.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We'll be moving on to the next case. 17171, Mr. Caldwell.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Officer Valenzuela is a former officer with the Phoenix Police Department. At the time of this incident, his peace officer certification in the state of Arizona was in an inactive status, and he's working for the Avondale Police Department as a detention officer. Avondale supervisors reviewed surveillance video from their detention facility and noticed possible inappropriate behavior between Officer Valenzuela and a female inmate that took place on December 12, 2016. A criminal and administrative investigation determined that between 0200 and 0400 hours on that date, Officer Valenzuela, who was working alone at the time, opened the door to the female holding cell multiple times. On at least two occasions, the lone female inmate was partially clothed. Officer Valenzuela kept the cell door open for extended periods of time and could be seen talking to this female inmate. His actions with the female inmate were determined to be a potential officer safety situation, were against the normal operating procedures of the Avondale Detention Facility, and deviated from training he received to become a detention officer. He also did not report the matter to his supervisors or take any or make any notes in his activity log. The female inmate told investigators that Officer Valenzuela asked her if she had breast augmentation surgery. Over the course of the night, she exposed her breasts and genitals to him and propositioned him for sex. Officer Valenzuela refused and each time told the female to put her clothes back on. Officer Valenzuela told investigators he routinely opened cell doors to visually check on inmates and did so for the female inmate because she had recently been ill. He said that the female exposed herself to him, but each time she did, he ordered her to put her clothes back on. She also propositioned him for sex, but he refused her advances. There's nothing to indicate in either the criminal or administrative investigation that there's any sexual contact between Valenzuela and the female inmate. The criminal case was inactivated and Valenzuela resigned from the agency. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have regarding this case.
Having none, may I have a motion?
So, I guess I do have a question. He was certified with Phoenix, but in Avondale, is that a certified position?
It is not, sir. He was a detention officer.
Okay. Chairman, we had extensive discussion about this and whether or not to present it to the board or not. he was in the period of time after leaving Phoenix where he was still certified, but he was an inactive certification, which does give post jurisdiction over him. Staff's concern was that even though he was in a civilian role at this time, still having jurisdiction, he still had the ability to apply for a position and become a peace officer again. So post staff felt that it was important to present the facts of this misconduct before you to make the determination of whether or not you wanted to take an action. This is really unusual that that this would come before you because he was inactive at the time. However, because it was reported by his employing agency, who did not appoint him, they saw that he was inactive and felt that he should report to staff. We felt that it was also important that we present it to the board. However, this is unique that this type of misconduct come before you when he wasn't acting as a peace officer at the time.
So I make a motion that we resolve at a later date. Second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
Chairman, I guess I would. The staff would need to know what you would like resolved. I know it's kind of open, but I don't answer.
What I was thinking, Mike, was just basically that if he doesn't apply for anything, there's really nothing for us to do. And this conduct that he did at Avondale, I don't know that we would review that as the board because it's not certified, and if he's just in his three-year window,
correct.
Then if something comes up later, he reapplies, then would we then maybe look at it again?
Yeah, if you don't mind, a more appropriate motion might be for no action agency discretion. That would make the record, and then any appointing agency would be able to look at the post records at Avondale and Phoenix's record to make the determination if he meets minimum qualifications.
So I will amend my motion as to no action agency discretion. Thank you, Council.
I will second that.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We'll be moving on to the next case, 17133. Ms. Moss.
Mr. Chairman, I need to recuse myself.
Yes, the record is flush.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Kathy Hawes, Winnebago Compliance Specialist. Brett Barber, formerly with the Tucson Police Department, was a tenured detective who worked in the gang unit and most recently in the street crimes interdiction unit. He was assigned cases involving homicides, such as with guns, carjackings, aggravated assault, burglaries, drive-by shootings, human trafficking to include minors, prostitution rings, and narcotic smuggling. A two-year review of his cases from 2014 to 2016 revealed significant deficiencies in his investigations to include not submitting evidence, not documenting witness, victim, and suspect interviews, and taking no action on cases, letting them sit for months on end. Numerous victims did not have their cases fully investigated until they were assigned to other detectives, sometimes months and years later. A TPD captain in his chain of command wrote, "He knowingly failed to take basic investigative steps that to this day could be responsible for allowing violent offenders and murderers to continue to roam the streets of our community. His failure to follow up on his cases cannot be described as mistakes or simple missteps. His failures are deliberate, knowingly, and show a clear pattern of nonfeasance." Any questions?
Well, I guess I would make a comment about the failure to supervise in there, too, somewhere. But that's
Chairman, that's how this all started, because when he went to the street interdiction unit, his new supervisor basically had carried over a homicide from gangs.
Yeah.
And the supervisor said, "What's happening with the homicide?" There was him and another detective that had the same issue. He assigned them a month to try to get it all taken care of, get it up to speed. He did not do that. The other detective was able to take care of his, and so as a result of that, they decided to investigate all his other cases for the 2 years prior. And that's when they did, I believe, like 46 or 48 cases, and they found 18 that had significant discrepancies in the investigations. Everybody said he's a great officer on the street, but don't let him take care of your evidence, your interviews, or anything like that, because he's not going to report them or not write supplements that he even did them.
Well, I think the sergeant's on the next page here somewhere. But seriously, that's shameful. But I appreciate it. If there are any questions, come on.
I do want to make a comment. We've seen cases like this in the past where we go out of agency discretion, but they've been mostly, best I know, property crimes, which is bad enough. This is pretty egregious.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really incompetent and woefully inappropriate. So I'm going to make a motion, if it's okay to make a motion, that we initiate proceedings.
I'll second it. I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
All right.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to the next case, 16194, Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. Arlene Heckel, your compliance specialist. Officer Jeff Williams was with the Tohono O'odham Police Department when this occurred. He had been there for 6 years. On August 16th, 2016, he started talking to a woman on a dating website. Approximately 4 days later, they decided to meet up for the first time. The meeting was at his home in Tucson, and it turned into a sexual encounter. Later that day, the woman went to the hospital in Tucson and alleged that she had been sexually assaulted by Officer Williams. On August 23rd, the Tohono O'odham Police Department was notified of this investigation and went to Officer Williams' home to place him on administrative leave and collect some of his department-issued property. At that time, when they took his vehicle, Officer Williams notified them that there was a bag of marijuana in the car that he had failed to put into property, even though 13 days earlier he had written a report when he took the property and said that he had placed it into property, which he did not at that time. During the Miranda investigation, a search warrant was done on his cell phone, and they turned all of that information over to the Tohono O'odham investigators. In that phone redaction, what they found was numerous videos of the officer filming himself while he was driving code 3 to high priority calls. He also filmed himself just driving, like through the dust storms and through high rainstorms, things like that. Videotaped himself on traffic stops and other calls. Also found numerous photographs of evidence of injuries to victims, of suspects, of seized evidence, seized narcotics, things like that. All of those things were violations of the Tohono O'odham policies. They also found that he had actually texted and sent some of those pictures to friends that were not involved in law enforcement. On September 19th, the Pima County Attorney's Office turned down the sexual assault allegation and did not file criminal charges because of no likelihood of conviction. On December 2nd, he was terminated from the Tohono O'odham Police Department because of all the policy violations they had found. And I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Heckel. Any questions, comments? Having done that, have a motion, please.
Make a motion to initiate proceedings.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? And the motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, we're moving on to case number 17-029.
Mr. Chairman, Michael Rose, compliance specialist here with POST. This is on Ismael Fuentes. He's formerly with the Attorney General's Office. On December 26, 2016, Paradise Valley Police Department conducted a felony stop on him while he was operating a state vehicle due to it had stolen license plates on it. After the stop, Fuentes failed to notify his supervisor that he had been handcuffed and detained in the back of the police car until Paradise Valley could determine who he was and who the vehicle actually belonged to. Fuentes then makes false and misleading statements in an email and a memorandum to his supervisor, basically surrounding the felony stop. What Fuentes writes in his email and memorandum is, I came into work to follow up on some paperwork, and when I went out for a workout, I was stopped by Paradise Valley PD. The fact is, Fuentes was never at the Attorney General's office prior to getting stopped by the Paradise Valley Police Department. Also, on December 26, 2016, was the recognized state holiday. Fuentes never requested permission or received approval to work on that day. And he did so anyway. But then he files a false timesheet where he claimed more work time than he actually worked. He claimed 4 hours of work time on December 26th. In reality, he was at the Attorney General's office for 1 hour and 45 minutes, which we determined by card readers and video. When questioned about his time discrepancy, he claimed that he put himself on duty when he was stopped by Paradise Valley PD. If you take that into account, that would have added 48 minutes to his time for a total of 2 hours and 33 minutes against the 4 hours that he was claiming on his timesheet. During the internal investigation, he did admit to his supervisor that he claimed more time than he actually worked on December 26th. Also, during that investigation, it was learned that Fuentes had been utilizing his assigned state vehicle for the past 4 to 6 weeks, 24/7, including using it for personal business activities. Fuentes never requested or received permission to utilize a state vehicle outside of strictly state business. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us more about the stolen license plate?
There was no determination how it actually got on the vehicle. It was a legitimate, looks like somewhere somebody had swapped a stolen license plate and taken the actual license plate off of the state vehicle. But we were unable to determine, and they were unable to determine where exactly that took place, but it was a legitimate stolen license plate.
So it was not an issued undercover plate?
No.
Any other questions, comments? May I have a motion?
I make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Rose, moving on to 17-028.
The next case is involving a Mr. Officer Jason Walter. He's formerly with the Surprise Police Department. On October 10th, 2015, Walter and his girlfriend, I'll refer to as ER, were involved in a verbal and physical altercation at his apartment. During that altercation, he pushes ER, causing her to get a bruise on her left forearm. He also begins throwing her belongings around. They live together or reside part-time together in the apartment. So he began throwing her belongings around in the apartment and also using quite a bit of profanity towards her. During this altercation, Walter's two teenage daughters are also present in the apartment, and he also used profanity towards them during that altercation. As a result of that altercation, Peoria Police Department filed three counts of disorderly conduct on Walter. He entered into a plea agreement where he pled not guilty to one count of disorderly conduct, and if he followed 26 diversion classes, that would be dismissed. Then on April 23rd, 2016, Walter and ER get into another verbal and physical altercation while they're in Las Vegas, Nevada. As a result of that altercation, ER received several bruises on her hands, arms, legs, and back. And Las Vegas Metro investigated it and filed one count of domestic battery on Walter, which is their version of domestic violence. Walter entered into a plea agreement on that case. He pled guilty to one count of domestic battery with a reduced jail time, community service, and domestic violence counseling. Walter was interviewed by the Surprise Police Department on October 22, 2015, and also again on October 3, 2016, referenced his involvement in the physical and verbal altercation that occurred back on October 10th, the first one I talked to you about. Walter was dishonest in his responses in both those interviews to Surprise Police Department. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
May I have a motion?
Make a motion that we initiate proceedings.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Moving on to case number 17-110.
Excuse myself, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, looks like the morning.
Chairman, members of the board, Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. This case is on former officer Aaron Jacobs with the Arizona Department of Public Safety. In March of last year, Jacobs was involved in a domestic dispute with his wife at their home. The verbal argument took place in front of their children and some neighborhood children that were also at the residence, who were told to leave before the physical confrontation ensued. Jacobs eventually ordered his wife to leave the house, to which she responded that he should leave the home, so he asked her for keys to a vehicle. She removed the keys from her purse and held them out for him to take. At this point, Jacobs pushed his wife with both hands to her chest area, causing her to fall backwards against the wall behind her and then to the floor. This fall caused her to sustain redness to her left elbow and hip area. She also called 911, and Pinal County Sheriff's Office responded. Jacobs was arrested for domestic violence assault and disorderly conduct. Later, when he was interviewed by DPS internal affairs investigators, Jacobs did not dispute his wife's written account of the incident that was taken by the sheriff's office the night of the incident. He confirmed he pushed her and described the push as an impact push. He admitted to consuming alcohol prior to this incident. The wife refused an interview with IA investigators regarding what happened. I will tell you that the prosecuting attorney in this matter filed a motion to dismiss both charges against Jacobs, and the court granted that motion in August of last year. Jacobs was terminated from DPS and appealed his termination to the Arizona Law Enforcement Merit System Council. Jacobs' appellate hearing took place on November 28th of 2017, and LEMSIC determined that there was just cause to discipline Jacobs, and they upheld the agency's decision to terminate him. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
May I have a motion?
Make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to case number 17-175.
I'll recuse myself, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this case is on former officer Francisco Perez of the Arizona Department of Public Safety. In July of last year, he was required to submit to a random drug test, and the lab results documented that he tested positive for marijuana. Perez told investigators with DPS that during the week of June 5th, 2017, he was preparing to leave for annual military training when he found two vape pens at his residence. One of the pens was blue in color, and he knew that that belonged to a girlfriend, but he didn't know who the other pen, which was silver in color, he didn't know who that pen belonged to. Both pens contained small amounts of residue, so he decided to smoke from both pens, and then he left for military training. And while he was on military training, he also used another friend's vape pen during that two-week training period. So when he came back and submitted to random drug testing, he tested positive for marijuana. He eventually figured out that the silver vape pen belonged to a former roommate, a military buddy of his, who he knew had smoked marijuana in the past. So he contacted this friend, and the friend confirmed that it's what they call a THC wax pen, and it was used to smoke marijuana. He submitted both vape pens, the blue and silver one, to DPS investigators, and the silver pen came back testing positive for marijuana. He was released from the agency. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We have a motion.
Make a motion to issue.
Second. A motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Complete. Thank you. That was the last of our new cases. We'll move into call to the public. Anyone would like 3 minutes, please? Having none, any future agenda items, Mr. Lane, for discussion or?
Depending on how the subcommittee goes today, I'm just going to do the agenda item
that's okay, thank you. With that, we will be adjourned.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.